Like I look at, you know, my annual elk hunt is, I call it a comfort cleanse. You know, everyone's on to cleanses, whether it's, you know, alcohol or juice or whatever it may be. But, you know, most of us live in a very comfortable environment year round.
Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast presented by Exo Mountain Gear. In the normal intro that we normally run with this show, we say that we want this show to help you be more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. And that's certainly true. And tonight I want to tell you about a resource that will help you do that. So in this episode, we speak with Jake from Atomic Athlete. And what I'm going to tell you about is something that developed after this episode was recorded. So in the course of our conversation with Jake in this episode, you won't hear about it. But what we did was release just for you guys a backcountry hunting training plan. So to get in shape for the backcountry, no matter where you're starting at, no matter what condition you're in now, this program can help you. It's scaled. There's three different levels. So again, if you're just getting into shape, you will find this program helpful. If you've been training a while, you can find a challenge in this program as well. But this all came about because after the show, Jake really reached out and offered this to us. Jake is a coach. He's a professional trainer. He's a backcountry hunter himself. He knows what the demands of the backcountry are, and he knows how to prepare for them physically and mentally, and this program will help you do it. So again, 100% free program, no strings attached, just to help you guys. Cannot thank Jake and the rest of the crew at Atomic Athlete enough for providing this for you. So it's really simple. To get the program, just go to exomountaingear.com/train, T-R-A-I-N, train. There, just enter your email address and we will send you the PDF right away. Again, no cost, no strings attached. Not going to sell you anything. Jake just wanted to offer this to you guys. And of course, we wanted to bring it to you guys to help you out. So the other great thing about this training program is you don't need a gym. You don't need a facility. Jake specifically wrote this program so that you can grab your Exo Mountain Gear pack or the other pack that you have and really do this program. Now, there are a few other little pieces of quote-unquote equipment that you need, but it's just simple DIY stuff, and Jake even shows you how to build it. So you're going to need a little box to do some step-ups. You're going to need some weight for your pack. This is going to cost you less than $30 to get all the equipment for this thing, and again, the plan's free. So check it out, exomountaingear.com/train. Okay, let's get into the show with Jake from Atomic Athlete. Again, we cover physical training, fitness, preparation, get detailed and specific about the demands of backcountry hunting, but we don't talk about this training program in this episode because it was developed after this was recorded. So hope you enjoy this one with Jake from Atomic Athlete. Jake, welcome to the show. How are you doing, bud?
Thanks, man. Doing good.
Yeah, excited to have you. I guess let's just start with the typical intro for listeners who are unaware and just kind of give us the elevator speech on who you are, what Atomic Athlete is, and then I'm so excited to dive into some topics here.
Nice. Well, I'm just a Texas boy that eventually over the past couple of years have gotten into backcountry hunting, you know, more specifically archery elk hunting. I was always really interested in the idea of being out in the woods, and I did some bow hunting when I was younger. It was kind of more chasing whitetail with an old rickety bow here in Texas. Ended up going in the military after high school and spent 4 years over in the 3rd Ranger Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment. And I did a little bit of hunting out there just on base, like rifle hunting, kind of more traditional kind of country boy style. Got out of the military a little bit after 9/11, after a deployment, and went to college and went and got a degree in business and started Atomic Athlete in 2009. And it's primarily originally started as a physical facility here in Austin, Texas, training athletes of all different sports and disciplines, everything from military to law enforcement, recreational athletes, endurance athletes, and kind of had that more traditional garage gym kind of setting at the time. You know, CrossFit was getting big. So a lot of people would be like, oh, you guys do CrossFit. It's like, no, it's a little bit different. You know, main goal in the gym is basically, you know, train inside to perform outside. It's kind of a common mantra that a couple other facilities like ours have. And the big goal is to make you better at whatever you do outside the gym. Eventually it spread to online programming. eventually end up spreading over to the military side. We do a lot of work with the guys over at SWIC, School of Special Warfare, teaching them how to program for, you know, mission-specific success. And then we've also kind of branched out on some other things, you know, medical training, pistol marksmanship, navigation. So a lot of those skills, a lot of those, you know, passions that all of us have and we really, really enjoy, we've kind of turned that into a business. Probably real similar to you guys over at XO Mountain Gear. You know, you take something you love and, you know, make a business out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm super excited to dive into the fitness side of things. Before we get that, you kind of mentioned some of the other training that you do, and you guys just wrapped up Vanguard. I just want you to talk about that just for a minute because it's super cool and I think unique in the sense that there's just not many opportunities to have a singular event where you can learn a diverse set of skills, yet something that I'm sure most guys and even some ladies as well are interested. So what's the Vanguard?
So the Vanguard is basically, well, it's funny how the Vanguard kind of started. We always talked about doing like this man camp. I'm a buddy in third group over in Fort Bragg. And we were talking about like what are we going to do when we get older, this and that. And he was like, man, I want to have this man camp.
Yeah.
And then at the time, actually, I was working with Rob, actually, a military athlete. So I was doing a lot of stuff that was on the shooting side and the marksmanship under stress side. So I was getting paid for it. So I expensed a lot of, you know, weapon specific type stuff. And then finally, my accountant asked, what is this expense category you guys have? And so I kind of asked her more questions about that. And she was like, well, you just need to have an event that involves, you know, these things. And so I was like, okay, cool. We'll do this man camp thing. And so we started it 4 years ago. And the main idea is to get people out of their element and get them out so they, you know, spend 3 days out in the Texas Hill Country in this big ranch and they camp. And they basically learn anywhere from 7 to 9 kind of blocks of instruction that have changed over the past couple years. We always try new stuff. But it's basically kind of a scratch the surface, a primer on a bunch of different things they may have never been experienced, have experience with. So we do striking, we do grappling, we do small and medium size, you know, slaughter and butchering. We do rope skills, we do navigation, we do defensive pistol work, shooting work. And luckily for me and the guys here at the gym, we have this like group of friends that are extremely skilled. We have like SWAT medics. We have like world champion guys in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, guys who fought competitively and have like mixed martial arts academies. So luckily for us, we just kind of put up the bat signal. We're like, hey guys, we want to have this event. Like, who's in? And so I had all these guys volunteer to come out and do it. And it's an amazing event. We get to do so many cool things. And each year we kind of get a little more, I guess, daring with some of the events. Like this year it was like a 2-person team, like nighttime run and gun, all under low light. So these guys go out.
Yeah, yeah.
So the ranch has 30 something pistol bays. So it's at nighttime. It's all under flashlights. You know, they're shooting on the move. And so most people will never get an opportunity to even do that, much less, you know, do that alongside with having a professional butcher show you how to stun, slaughter, eviscerate, and then butcher a feral hog. So we actually did 12 feral hogs this year. And that was a big step up from, you know, doing the rabbits and the chickens that we've kind of done in the past. So yeah. Basically just a weekend and getting exposure to a bunch of cool things that you've never been exposed to.
Yeah, that's awesome. If guys or have their ears peaked, maybe they're in or near Texas, how can they stay up to date with that? Maybe find more info on it.
So we just had it. We have it every fall, basically the last week of October. And you can basically hop on the website. There's a subcategory, basically says the Vanguard. If you get on our Instagram account right now, you know, we're posting images of that. And you can actually click and opt in and get basically like the heads up when the next one's going to be popping up.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, let's get on topic. We could talk about the Vanguard for an hour, I'm sure. But let's talk about fitness for the backcountry hunter. And first of all, it's one of these deals that it's something I'm personally super into, but it kind of drives me nuts in terms of how much talk there is about it, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions, kind of a lot of fluff on social media, stuff like that. So let's really talk about why. Like, why fitness for the backcountry hunter? What does fitness, and as we'll talk about a specific type of fitness, do for the backcountry hunter?
Well, I think fitness is just one component of success. You know, I mean, if you listen to like Corey Jacobson talk and all the different outfitters that he works with, and you know, it's like one thing that every outfitter says, I wish my guys were in better shape. You know, so if you're going to spend the money and the coin to go up and do a backcountry hunt, potentially guided, then you need to get your money's worth and go up there ready to move. Your guys probably spend, you know, hundreds of days a year in the field, and that's their element, and that's what they do for a living. So if you're going to go up there and spend, you know, 5, 10, 15 grand to go do this hunt, and you're physically unable to do it, that's a huge issue. And likewise, for the guys who are doing more wilderness hunts, DIY, if you're going to take, you know, 7 to 14 days, a large portion of your, you know, free time, and take it away from your family and go in this endeavor, you need to get the most out of that hunt. And one of the things from my personal experience, and guys who I've talked to who are, you know, more experienced than I and spend a lot of time in the mountains and hunt extended durations, is the more time you're out there hunting, the better the chance of success will be. And if physically you're unable to do it, then you're not going to be able to get the most out of that hunt. You're going to have to stop, and you're going to have to rest, and you're not going to be able to get to that bull on that next ridge, or potentially not get, you know, two or three drainages over in time to actually hunt that animal. So physical fitness is one of those things that it's a very controllable factor, and it's not that challenging. There's so much information out there right now that you can follow. There's multiple companies, multiple programs, some free. There's plenty of coaches out there where that's something that you can actually put in the time, and it's going to have a huge return on investment, not only when you go to the mountains, but more specifically just for your general health.
So let's just go ahead and dive into, you know, we're not talking about, and you even mentioned, like, your goal with Atomic Athlete is to train for performance outside of the gym. So when we talk about fitness, we're not talking about being more fit for more fitness sake. We want to talk, especially today, about being more fit and how that can help us be better hunters, and really get specific on what is that. I mean, we have, you know, there's plenty of guys out there who are like, oh, the only thing I do is hike. Like, all I need to do to hunt and hike in the hills is hike in the hills. You have guys on the other side of a spectrum who are kind of like gym bros who are lifting and doing all kinds of stuff. And then you have to question, well, how much does that actually transfer into helping you hunt effectively? So in your experience, because you both do this personally as well as do a ton of sports specific training in a wide front and a wide variety of fronts besides just hunting, what are those sports specific fitness attributes that a backcountry hunter should look at and pursue?
That's a good question. And the key thing that you mentioned right there was, you know, fitness. And fitness is sport specific. So you take a football player, he's probably not going to do very well in CrossFit. And likewise, a CrossFit athlete probably won't do very well in football. But both those athletes, relatively speaking, are extremely fit for their chosen endeavor. So when we talk about hunting in the backcountry, and I'd probably say the closest component to hunting in the backcountry probably would be mountaineering, is that the fitness attributes and the type of training you're going to do is very specific to being successful in that endeavor. It's not going to carry over to other recreational activities, whether that's competitive cycling or ultra running, whatever it may be. Although there's going to be some carryover, what we're going to talk about today is mostly hunting backcountry with load. And so the three primary attributes that we've established are going to be necessary for success is one, aerobic capacity, two, lower body strength endurance, and three is connective tissue joint resiliency. And the description, or basically the example of each of these, is that aerobic capacity, you know, it's going to be the primary conditioning component that a hunter is going to need. It's a metabolic adaptation, and it's the ability to move for extended durations, whether that's hours, days, and depending on what kind of hunter you are, it may be 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, if you're a Colorado resident and you're hunting over the counter, you have a full month to hunt. So it is a very, very long duration type thing. It's not just one afternoon, typically speaking. In regards to lower body strength endurance, this could be our primary strength component. It's a muscular adaptation. And that's the ability to exert force repeatedly over an extended duration without fatigue. And that's typically going to involve you going up mountains and you going down mountains. And the third thing is probably one of the most neglected. And it's not so much like a fitness attribute, but it's more the idea that my ankles, knees, hips, and my feet are actually able to take the abuse that's going to be required for multiple days, weeks, and maybe even a month-long hunting season.
Yeah, I think that is overlooked. I'm excited to talk about it. Let's dive into these individually and specifically and talk again a little bit more about what they are, and then also just dive into training them specifically. So I think a big takeaway that I would love our listeners to have is a plan. You know, like, they want to train with intention, and we can get to the plans that you have developed specifically for hunting, but let's talk about how we can train each of these specifically and then kind of wrap this all together so that they have a big picture on, okay, here's what fitness actually looks like for the backcountry hunter. So aerobic capacity, I mean, you mentioned it's really the energy to really carry ourselves, you know, through a hunt, through an extended hunt specifically. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and give us concepts on how we train aerobic capacity. Should we be doing that, you know, like at what intensity, what duration, loaded, unloaded? Let's discuss these variables and really talk about what that looks like.
Yeah. Now, the downside of aerobic capacity, Mark, is that it's not Instagram worthy. You know, the bottom line is, I mean, like, it's like you're not like you're doing heavy dumbbell rows, your shirt off, and you're all jacked. And like, yeah, this is awesome. And you pull my bow back. And I mean, it's aerobic capacity is, it's not sexy, it's not that entertaining, but it's one of those things that it has probably the largest return on investment as far as training time goes for the backcountry hunter or an endurance athlete. The majority of work endurance athletes do is building that capacity. And when I say build capacity, you're basically increasing the size of the tank. Aerobically speaking, and the aerobic energy system is the most efficient one. It is going to be almost inexhaustible. So unlike where you're doing competitive cycling, competitive triathlon, if you deplete your glycogen, you're going to do what's commonly called, or hit what's commonly called, a bonk, where you just kind of crash, your output severely decreases because those guys are in race mode. They're actually racing. The backcountry hunter is very, very unlikely to have to go into race mode. You know, there's an exception here or there where it's like, hey, that bull's moving or that deer's moving. I got to get up and over that ridge really quickly. And so I'm going to have to like really put the screws in and get over there. That's typically not the case with success, you know, overall in the backcountry from our experience. It's going to be that ability to go hours, days, and potentially weeks. So the aerobic capacity is going to be trained basically by low intensity and high volume. And it really is a volume game. The more, the better, okay? The key component here is a lot of guys are going to listen to this, and they're probably not going to train up until like maybe a month or two before hunting season. And that's definitely not the right answer. As a backcountry hunter, if you take, you know, your hunt seriously, you need to train year-round. And you don't have to go crazy and do these crazy CrossFit regimes, or you don't have to do these big, long strength macro cycles. But you need to maintain some level of fitness. And I would say a good starting volume for aerobic capacity is probably going to be about 90 minutes to 2 hours per week. And we usually want to spread that over about three sessions, one of which always needs to be on the longer side. So an example would be like Monday, I'm going to do a 30-minute run at a low intensity. Wednesday, I'll do a 30-minute ride at a low intensity. And then Friday, I'll do maybe 60 minutes of aerobic work, a 30-minute run followed by a 30-minute ride with 60 minutes total. So when you look at your weekly training, you want to look at it from the cumulative volume over that week. And it's all going to be done at a very low intensity effort. Typically speaking, we're training 55 to 75% of max heart rate. And for most athletes, that's going to be probably around 130 and 140 beats per minute. Now, this is the same type of training you would do if you were going to race triathlons or go and try to set these mountaineering records and hit multiple peaks. The only difference is towards the end of your training in that situation, you would involve a lot more high intensity and threshold work.
Yeah. So when you say in terms of intensity, and you mentioned like a, you know, the heartbeat range and like that, but for guys who are unaware with that, I mean, you're really talking about you should be doing this at an intensity where you can really almost hold a conversation and speak. I mean, you're not like gassing yourself for a 30-minute run. I mean, because I hear it from guys who say, oh, I can't run for 30 minutes straight. Well, I think the intensity, you're going out too hard. You can't hold that for 30 minutes. So just talk a little bit more about what that intensity should look like.
Yeah. So the main goal with training aerobic capacity is basically to increase your output at a certain heart rate or certain level of exertion. So what we see a lot of times is athletes, they'll do like high intensity work. We'll have them go out and okay, hey, like run at 140 beats per minute for 40 minutes, right? And it's kind of like a standard aerobic capacity assessment. And what they find is that their aerobic energy system is so underdeveloped that at one point they'll have to stop and walk. And I was guilty of it myself a couple of years ago as well. I went out and did an assessment, me and the other gym owner, Todd. And we got like 30 minutes in and we just couldn't get our heart rate below 145. And so we had to stop and walk at one point because we were so dependent on our glycolytic energy system. So that was really, really well developed. But aerobically speaking, like we were very underdeveloped. And with the rise of high intensity training, everyone's really into like, hey, I can go do 5 minutes of work and get the same value out of, you know, that would have an hour of aerobic capacity. And that's not the case. I think the fitness industry and the trends are making like a full circle in regards to the high intensity is better. And then it's like, oh, wait, actually low intensity is good because it builds the foundation for the high intensity work to come. And so when you go out and do these efforts, it should be a conversational pace that you can breathe through your nose that is very, very easy to actually do. And for some athletes, depending on how developed they are, they might actually walk at certain portions of this and have to really slow down to be like, wow, this is not even doing anything. Now, the beauty of this, Mark, is that over time, your aerobic capacity improves. And then what happens is you find yourself having to move faster to maintain that heart rate. So I think I was doing a lot of aerobic capacity work this spring, and it got to a point where what was originally a slow trot was now a very hard run for me to maintain that heart rate, 145 beats per minute, because my aerobic capacity had to increase so much. So it is one of those things where initially it starts out, it's so slow and so easy that you're like, why am I even doing this? But as it becomes developed and as you build your capacity, you're forced to move faster and faster because your output, or basically your efficiency, is so much higher.
Yeah, that's good. Hopefully that encourages some guys who are, you know, turned off of like, oh God, I can't go out there and kill myself. You know, guys who maybe not have been as active, like it's okay to go out there and start where you are. And even if it doesn't feel crazy intense, if you just stick with it, that you're actually going to become more and more efficient, be able to do more and more work.
I was at I was having a beer with a special forces captain at Fort Bragg maybe like a month or two ago, and we were talking about it, and he goes, well, if I don't throw up, I don't feel like I did anything worthwhile. And I just kind of like smiled and shook my head, and I was like, oh man, like you couldn't be more wrong, you know. But at the same time, it was like that was his mindset, and this is kind of part of the culture in the military. And I think, you know, the older we get, you know, I'm 37 now, is that we have to train intelligently. You know, it's like, if I'm going to go spend time away from my family, time away from my profession, and I'm going to spend that time to train, I want that training to have a really high return on investment when it comes to my chosen endeavor, and that's going to be backcountry hunting.
Yeah. So this is probably going to transition us between aerobic capacity and into this lower body strength endurance that we want to talk about. But what about doing these, you know, loaded aerobic capacity efforts? So, you know, a hike with weight versus just going out for a jog type thing.
So there's a couple of different kind of, we call them modalities basically. And a modality is just an activity. It can be running, cycling, rowing, swimming, tire drag, step ups, any activity that's going to elevate the heart rate. Now in regards to what endeavor you choose, certain modalities are going to be much more beneficial and have more carryover. And I would say that the backcountry hunter, for example, he is one that load bearing activities are going to have a much higher transfer than non-load bearing. And load bearing basically means that you're moving your body weight and potentially external load over ground. When non-load bearing activities like swimming and rowing and cycling, they don't consider your body weight. So a guy who's, you know, 250 hops on an Aerodyne or air assault bike and he's able to crank out all these great numbers, right? But his weight's not being considered in that. And the mountains, when you go up there and you hunt, your body weight is going to have a severe impact on how well you can move over ground. So for athletes that are going to hunt the backcountry, load-bearing activities, which would be running, hiking under load, doing like a weighted step-up if you're kind of a flatlander athlete like myself, or doing a slow, heavy tire drag, are going to have much better transfer than some of the other ones, swimming, rowing, cycling, etc. The key thing, though, is that like if you're a heavier athlete, if you're an older athlete, if you have a pre-existing injury, you really need to monitor how much of those load-bearing activities that you actually do, because you could incur injury. If you're a 250-pound guy, you're, you know, 45 years old, you haven't trained in a while, you're like, oh, hey, I heard Jake talk on the Backcountry podcast, you know, I'm going to go do this. And you go out and try to do like an hour, hour and a half run the first day, you can hurt yourself. So you have to kind of take your individual current level of fitness into consideration before you jump into one of these, you know, endeavors or one of these kind of training sessions. Start slow and then build up by using something that we call progression. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, though, you know, following a plan, not just doing random workouts. A couple of key components, we call them the four P's, is purpose. You know, why am I training? Program is actually following a plan. Progression is the other one, which basically as you move through your training program, it's going to get harder and harder and harder to kind of force that adaptation continually. And the last one is periodization. And that kind of is in more reference to like my annual calendar, like you were mentioning earlier. So you have to progress these things. They have to be periodized, and you have to actually follow your plan.
just to mention, you mentioned the modalities there. Most that listeners are, I'm sure, familiar with. You mentioned the tire drag. I know what that looks like. I've done it. It's brutal. But for it's listeners awful. Who might be going, what do you mean? Like, what? How are you dragging a tire? What do you mean? Walk us through what that is, because I've talked a ton about how step-ups, for example, have been super effective for me, again, like you, as a flatlander. God, I did more step-ups this year than ever, and it was phenomenal in terms of how effective it was. But what's the tire drag? What does that look like?
Yeah, so the idea of a tire drag was basically, you know, whenever you climb uphill or you go uphill, it's a concentric movement. So you're basically going up, 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 and however many thousand feet elevation gain you may hit, it's a very repetitive motion. And I really enjoy step-ups, but stepping up is kind of step up, step down, step up, step down. So I wanted to find something that was a little closer to what I experienced in the mountains. And we actually initially used the tire drag for athletes who were injured. They had a back injury, for example, and they couldn't do any kind of external loading for lower body exercises like back squats or lunges or whatever it may be. So I was like, okay, cool. Like, you know, this will be a substitute protocol for lower body strength training. We'll have them drag a heavy tire. And then one day I went out and did it with one of the injured athletes, and I was like, oh my God, this is awful. Like, this is so challenging, and it's just like walking uphill with a pack. Everything about it. The key is that your tire has to be loaded heavy enough. And when I say heavy enough, I'm talking like probably a 20 to 25 minute mile pace. That's going to force you to slow down to that pace. So everyone's tire is going to be a different size, different shape. The terrain you're going to drag it on is going to be different. There's a little bit of sand or gravel on the road. The key is that you need to get that tire heavy enough to where it is a slow, hard walk. And basically, it's just a strap. You can have a strap around your waist, or you can have a harness. Some of our buddies sell an actual harness, which is much more comfortable because it doesn't really pinch your hips. And you throw in a 45-pound plate on like a 31/10/50 tire, or you could throw a sandbag. You could throw your hunting pack in it. And you basically throw it around your waist or over your shoulders, and you just start walking. And it's really, really similar to going uphill. It's that concentric burn. Your legs are on fire. You're breathing heavy. It even kind of gives you that slightly forward angle that most of us have to incorporate when we're going uphill. So you have that same angle, that stress on your calves, kind of that hinging at the hips. And from what I found, it's probably the most effective and probably my favorite flatlander exercise for guys who can't actually train in the mountains. And we'll make sure, I think we're going to give you guys a link to the videos that we have as well on how to build it and how to actually to utilize it as a training tool. And it's phenomenal.
Yeah. For sure. And when you say favorite and phenomenal, you actually mean torturous and horrible. But yeah.
Yeah. I have a couple of stud buddies who own CrossFit gyms here in town, and we'll always stop into each other's facilities and train. And more than a couple of those guys have been broken by a tire drag.
Awesome. So let's transition into this lower body strength endurance. You mentioned even with the tire drag, it's a concentric movement. As we talk about strength and strength endurance, just clear up what is concentric, what is eccentric, and then specifically, how does that apply to us as hunters? Because we actually do need to know this and train both.
Well, I kind of put it as an example of most of us, you know, hunt, so we kind of understand going uphill and downhill. Uphill is typically going to be a concentric exercise, which is also like the portion of a squat or a lunge when you're standing up. Your muscles are contracting to actually get that movement or get that load up and to complete a full repetition. The eccentric phase, something that's a little more challenging to train, but all of us have experienced it as hunters, just coming downhill and having that controlled descent. So unless you've done like controlled descent squats or have you done any kind of jumping variation, then most of us aren't really exposed to eccentric training. But the key thing is you have to train both of them, because if you're in the mountains, if you go up, you have to come down at some point. And typically, coming down is going to happen under fatigue. So at least the way me and my hunting partner hunt, we typically are camping and bivvying out in lower elevations because A, we need water. B, we know in the morning that the thermals are going to kind of force us to hunt uphill. And then likewise, if you're hunting from a vehicle or road, typically those travel corridors are going to be in low ground, and you're basically going to be hunting uphill as the thermals are coming down. So most hunters, their day are going to kind of start out with going uphill hunting. The thermals will switch. They're coming uphill. You usually hunt that contour. And then at the end of the day, you're probably going to hunt back down, depending on the type of hunting you do. So when you train this, you know, concentric strength and eccentric strength, I like to couple them in that same manner that I experience them in the mountains. So that's going to be a good portion beforehand, whether you're doing a specific exercise for a certain volume, whether you're training complexes, or whether you're using a modality like the tire drag or the aerodyne or a bicycle to actually train that effort, is to follow it up with something that's going to be specific to going downhill. Now, obviously, the best case scenario is you're in the mountains and you're actually training like that. You're going to spend a day going uphill and then you're going to spend a day coming downhill. But if you live in Texas and other places, Florida, somewhere out east, you just can't do that. There's not enough hills up here unless you want to go up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, a 100-meter hill. But you can do that with other exercises.
Yeah, that's I've made the connection on focusing on training concentrics and eccentrics, but I've never put it together like that in terms of training concentric and then, you know, the eccentric, or you're essentially downhill, your descent is going to be under fatigue, and actually training in a session in that way. That's like such a simple but I think helpful tip. So what would that look like? Well, what's an example of doing a good concentric effort, getting to some level of fatigue, and then following up with that in eccentric? What are some exact exercises or combinations we could do that with?
Well, the good thing about strength endurance is, you know, like I said, you can do it with an exercise, whether that's, you know, something as simple like a bilateral exercise, like a back squat, where, you know, you can use kettlebells, barbells, whatever it may be. But you can also do it with certain modalities. And like I said, in our primary backcountry program, the Ultimate Predator, the tire drag is like, it's the main exercise that we use. So doing like a 45-minute tire drag, let's just say loaded at 45 pounds, assuming that that's going to force you to move at a very slow rate. Do that for 45 minutes, come in, and then do 10 rounds, 20 seconds of jump lunges, 40 seconds of rest. So basically, you're kind of coming off that 45 minutes, your legs are going to be smoked, and then I'm going to force you into an exercise where you have to control your descent repeatedly. That's just a short example of it. There's a bunch of different variations of it. And like I said, that example is going to be specific to someone like myself who's here in Texas and not in the mountains. Like I said, ultimately, the best case scenario is that you can live in the mountains, you can train in the mountains, you can train at elevation, you can train with your pack daily. That's just not the case for a lot of guys who go out west and hunt.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned something like this squat being bilateral. So let's talk about what is bilateral, what's its counterpart being unilateral. Define those, and then why is that important for us to consider as hunters as well? Because unilateral movement's a great way to prep.
Yeah, so bilateral basically just means that you're using both legs, and unilateral is kind of a one-legged exercise. So bilateral exercises would traditionally be squats, RDLs, exercises like that, regardless of what tool or method you use. Unilateral exercises are going to be one-legged exercises. So what you'll see, lunges, walking lunges, Bulgarian split squats, exercises like that that seem to have a little more carryover. Just because the natural way that we move is kind of a unilateral movement. You know, when we're moving through the mountains, when we're moving through heavy timber, you know, you need to have that ability to stabilize and protect the joints in your lower body. Like if you're stepping over a heavy downfall, if you're packing out an animal, I mean, anyone who's done that before knows that when you have that pack out, you're crawling over some pretty hairy things. And so it's a little more, there's a little more transfer in regards to unilateral exercises for the backcountry hunter than the traditional just heavy barbell back squat.
Awesome. So we hit some on aerobic capacity, some on this lower body strength endurance, and then you mentioned connective tissue resiliency. What does that look like? How do we develop that? How should that be in our minds as we train as hunters?
So I think the big thing is I've seen, you know, more than a few guys go up there and physically are just total studs. But then what happens is, you know, like aerobically they're developed, they have the strength, but their feet, their knees, their ankles, their joints, they just can't handle the daily abuse. If you properly train by choosing the right load-bearing activities, so if you're doing, you know, trail running, if you're doing the tire drag, if you're covering, you know, covering ground with your body, whether it's hiking under load, wherever it may be, the good thing is that it will kind of automatically happen. And one of the biggest things is footwear and foot care. So even if their knees and ankles and everything is strong, their fitness is there, if they don't train in their boots, they just show up to a hunt for 2 weeks and they throw on a pair of brand new boots, or they throw on a pair of boots they haven't actually worn, and they get a blister on day two or day three, and it's a 14-day hunt, their ability to hunt is going to be greatly diminished. And so one of the things that we kind of talk about is, you know, as you move, you know, throughout the annual season, the training calendar, is that your training needs to go from general to specific. So when, you know, let's say you're doing an archery hunt in September, if you're training in January and February, your programming can be very general. You know, it doesn't have to be super specific to hunting. You can like hit the gym, you know, once or twice a week, go for a run, go for a ride, go for a swim. But as you get closer and closer to that hunt or the specific event, your training needs to be much more specific. And the more specific you can get your training, the better transfer you'll have. So that means doing your training sessions in your hunting boots, potentially even doing it in your actual clothes that you're hunting. Because I bumped into some guys in the New Mexico wilderness like 2 years ago. The guy like seemed to have everything dialed in. The guy was really intelligent, really smart. And the funny thing was, I was coming down the mountain and I smelled something funny. I was like, what is that smell? And apparently this kid was he was powdering his ass, for lack of a better word, because he read online that there was this fancy merino underwear and he'd never worn it before. So he went out and wore it and he hunted for 2 days and he got monkey butt so bad that he couldn't even hunt the next day. So that's an example of someone who, I mean, he was probably tuning his broadheads, he was probably in shape, he was fit, and he goes and throws in this variable that was not planned for, not expected, and it cost him hunting time. And I believe he didn't even get a bull that year. So it was one of those things where, I mean, that right there could have cost him having a successful hunt just because he didn't properly train and prepare using the things he was going to wear in the backcountry.
So let's talk a little bit about something that's not listed in terms of one of the core attributes for the mountain hunter, but something that I'm sure many of our listeners are somewhat interested in, as most guys are, and that's just general strength. So whether this is kind of the gym guy who likes to hit the weights, or someone like myself, I'm actually currently in a strength program just because I wasn't super satisfied with where I was, and I felt like I needed to get stronger in general. How does strength training fit in terms of general strength training, and then in terms of getting more specific? Obviously, as someone who wants to hunt effectively year after year after year, I don't want to like blow up and turn into a huge meathead. I want to be strong, but obviously keep that in check with all their fitness attributes. So really looking at the question of how strong is strong enough. I know that you guys actually posted some really helpful sort of strength standards, strength guidelines. You have different levels of strength for certain types of athletes. So walk us through kind of how that fits in with a backcountry hunter.
Well, I think it's as men, we kind of have this natural tendency to really focus on strength. You know, it's just like, oh, what can you bench press? What can you squat? This and that. And I myself am guilty of it and have been guilty of it for a long time. But after a certain point, you know, in your training career, you have to kind of sit there and look and be like, okay, if I can, you know, deadlift 400 pounds, will a 500 pound deadlift help me kill more elk? You know, and the bottom line is no, it won't. So there is, we kind of refer to this as like, when we look at all the fitness attributes, and it's going to be a different perspective based on each sport, something called floors and ceilings, where the floor is going to be kind of the minimum acceptable level, of that one attribute. Then there's also something called the ceiling, which is going to be like, hey, once we get up towards the ceiling, all this additional time that we're spending trying to get stronger could be better served somewhere else. So all of us have limited training time. We all have families and jobs and careers and other things we got to take care of. And if you're in the gym, you know, day after day, hammering away, chasing that 500-pound deadlift, you may be better served working on your calling, working on your navigation, working on your shooting skills. And so we have to kind of keep that in mind. And so when we actually wrote an article called How Strong is Strong Enough, and we broke it down into six different levels. And it goes all the way from like level one being the standard endurance athlete to level six being the strongman, CrossFit level games athlete, you know, professional football, Olympic weightlifting. And so the backcountry hunter kind of falls into a level two. So they need to have strength because strength is really important. It's the foundation of all athletic performance. But at the same time, they don't need a lot of strength. You know, very rarely do you see the guy who's like the gym monster is the guy running up and down the mountains. It's, you know, when you go see, I've trained with lots of mountaineers before, and those guys in the gym are, by all the definition of the word, they're very weak in the gym, but they can run up and down the Grand Teton like again and again and again, you know, when the average guy is still just huffing and puffing behind them. So you have to have a level of strength for injury prevention, and also so that way you can actually utilize the muscle tissue that you have. But you don't have to get too wrapped around these certain, you know, metrics that are commonly seen in gym, like the back squat, the deadlift, the bench press, et cetera.
Yeah. But what does strength bring to the table for a hunter? So again, we got plenty of hunters out there who are, all I need is just to hike with my pack. That's all I need to do. And that obviously is good training. Like, that is what we're training for. But in the off season, if one of these guys were to do some strength training, maybe get a little bit stronger to, you know, an acceptable level of strength, what is that going to do for them as a hunter, if anything?
I think the big thing is that, so all of us have muscle tissue, and being able to recruit that muscle tissue is important. So typically what happens with maximal strength training, when I say maximal strength training, I'm talking about heavy barbell based lifting, you know, in regards to one rep max, 75, 85, 95% for rep scheme of anywhere between 1 and 5. What happens is that's going to be a neurological adaptation. And so your brain's basically going to send signals to your muscle tissues. And what's going to happen is that if you don't train maximal strength ever, then your body is never going to really develop the ability to recruit all of the existing muscle tissue. It's going to be one of those things where maximal strength training is pretty much the basis and the first thing that we always do in the gym and for any specific training program, because we want that adaptation. We want the athlete that when he needs it, he can recruit all of his existing muscle fibers. Now, once he's able to do that, then the athlete will fall into their hypertrophy-based training, which is, I'm trying to get bigger, or strength endurance training, which is more appropriate for the backcountry hunter. So some level of maximal strength training should be done pretty much at all times, unless you're about to roll into your hunt. And it doesn't have to be crazy. It doesn't have to be hard. You don't got to follow Jim Wendler's 5-3-1. You don't have to do strong lifts. Working in a moderate loading to a moderate volume is usually going to get the job done, but it's also really important for injury prevention, you know, because walking is a very specific movement that you're not going to develop strength in that full range of motion. So now if you, you know, have to step over something really, really high, if you have to do a big descent coming down, that you're not going to be at risk for injury because your body, your muscle tissue, as well as the connective tissue in your joints, is going to be strong and be able to handle that stress.
Yeah, that's a great point. If we're simply just hiking, walking along, and not on all that uneven terrain, as you mentioned, that's not full range of motion versus something like, obviously, something like a deep squat. Even if you're not loading it super heavy, at least you're training that range of motion, both muscularly and at the joint level. I think that's key.
Yeah, because even if you train like, you know, so I know, have you read the book, The New Alpinism?
Is that Twight?
Mark Twight wrote the intro, but it was actually Scott Johnson and, Steve House and Scott Johnston. So Steve House is some mountaineering ninja, and then Scott Johnston is a great cross-country coach, or a cross-country ski coach. And that's a great book talking about the importance of training, the importance of strength in these mountain endeavors. But one of the tests and assessments they had was, is 1,000 step ups for time on a 12 inch box. And the thing is like, I very rarely take a 12 inch elevation gain per step in the mountains. And so typically maybe it's 6 or 7 inches. So there's small choppy steps going up this incline, right? And so if you just walk in these small choppy steps going uphill, even if you're under load, you're really only developing strength in a very, very small range of motion. And having the ability to, you know, like throw on a 100-pound pack, right, and then stand up with it. If you try to do that, but you never actually put any sort of weight on your body, you're just kind of running through the mountains all the time, there's a potential for injury there. And so what we want to do is prepare as best as we can in the artificial environment, which is the gym, for outside environments such as the mountains. The last thing you want to do is, you know, be throwing on a heavy pack, you know, trying to pack out an elk, and then something goes out, your low back goes out, you sustain a lower body injury. Then now it's like, okay, hey, now I'm injured and I still have to get this animal out somehow.
So let's try and think from a big picture here. We talked about, you know, the importance of aerobic capacity, building that for hunters, and that takes time. As we mentioned, that is just a volume game, right? You have to put in the time to build that capacity. Yep. We have strength endurance along with that. Those are obviously what's going to be a bit more specific to hunting season. So we can get into those closer towards hunting season, but then we have this whole rest of the year where we can continue to train those attributes at some level, but then we can work in some strength training and all this. So help us think through, I mean, I know this is a very high level question, but just some advice or some thoughts on structuring a training year, let's say from January 1 on, of just things to look for as a backcountry hunter, kind of when to make some changes, when to make some shifts in training and all that.
That is a pretty broad question, because you think of the diversity of guys who hunt the backcountry, right? You have, you know, like the Cam Haynes guys that want to just like pump hard, crush it, you know, go do all this crazy stuff. You have like just the guy who just enjoys being outdoors and hunting, who's like maybe from somewhere out, you know, somewhere out east or somewhere flat. And then you have the older kind of demographic, right, where those guys aren't going to be going to the gym and doing snatches and all, you know, cleans and heavy back squats. So there is, you really have to kind of consider like who am I and what is going to be a reasonable expectation with my training calendar. I would say at bare minimum, if you're going to be hunting in the backcountry, try to carry a pack for 1 hour a week, right? And so a lot of guys would be like, oh, you're only going to walk for an hour, but when you're hunting, you're walking this and that, you know, but it's more the ability to do it on a very frequent basis, so that once a week will kind of keep your feet strong. It'll keep you accustomed to walking with the pack. It's not going to so much develop an energy system. Like, so rucking is typically done, you know, unless you're going uphill, if you're just walking with a pack on, your heart rate's not going to be very elevated. But it's about as specific as it gets to hunting. The only thing that rucking does not compare to hunting is that there's no elevation potentially if you're somewhere that doesn't have hills. But a 60-minute walk with a pack and your hunting boots, probably your pack loaded 25 to 45 pounds, I'd say it's bare minimum. Obviously, if you're going to be planning on packing out heavy animals or packing camp in, you're going to need to go heavier and you're going to need to go longer. I would say train strength weekly. And it can be gym-based work or it can be body weight work. You can still build a fairly high level of fitness and very, very high level of strength endurance fitness just by using your body weight and very, very minimal tools, kettlebells, sandbags, a pull-up bar, stuff like that. And then probably at least an hour of aerobic work per week. And the further out you are, then the less specific it has to be. So if it's January, February, you don't need to be doing load-bearing activities if you don't want to. You can hit the pool. You can hit the treadmill. You can hit those weird little, what they call elliptical machines if you wanted to, long as your heart rate gets up to a certain point. I'd say at a minimum, like, those three things need to be done on a weekly basis.
Yeah. Yeah, that's helpful, just to simplify it. Of like, you know, you can check those boxes, and hopefully listeners are hearing this and hearing how doable it is to do that year-round. Because, you know, as the saying goes, it's much easier to stay in shape than it is to get in shape, right?
Yeah, maintenance is always going to require a much lower training volume than it is to create improvement. And, I mean, even the guy we hunted with, this a guy named Mike Wellen, he'd kind of mentored my hunting partner like online for like 5 or 6 years, you know, back and forth, these emails. And then we finally got an opportunity because he drew a tag in the same unit as New Mexico as us. And we got an opportunity to hunt with him. And I mean, he was 57. So we're like, wow, I mean, he's 20 years older than me. Like, I mean, is he going to be able to hang? And I was really impressed by how fit this guy was. And, you know, so his training protocol was he would basically go to a really tall building. He lives in Wisconsin. And he would put on his hunting pack and he would walk up the stairs in this tall building and ride the elevator down and walk up the stairs, ride the elevator down. And like, that was what he did to get in shape. And, I mean, like I said, we packed that bull out and we were all carrying well over 100 pounds, and it was, I was really impressed, you know? So it doesn't have to be super dorky. It doesn't have to be super geeky. The key is that you have to have the discipline to train regularly and train year round.
Yeah. Something we've talked about on the podcast, you know, in other shows, with whether that's training or doing events like the death hike stuff that we've done, is just kind of the mental resilience aspect of training. So as we're doing all this, we're not only training our physical bodies, but we're training our mind. We're getting just flat out tougher, both physically and mentally. Is that something that you find is helpful in hunting, and how so, just from your own experience or from guys that you've hunted with, that all this training isn't just physical, but it really plays into that mental game as well?
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, hunting, I mean, being a former military guy, and I totally agree with Rourke Denver, one of your previous guests, that like, for military guys and veterans, I think backcountry hunting is one of the best things you can do. And like, I look at, you know, my annual elk hunt is, I call it a comfort cleanse. You know, everyone's on to cleanses, whether it's, you know, alcohol or juice or whatever it may be. But, you know, most of us live in a very comfortable environment year round. You know, if you live in Texas, you have air conditioning. If you live up in the mountains, you probably have, you know, a nice wood burning stove. And I mean, we have really high end gear. Everything about our life is very easy. So I think going into the backcountry with the expectation of like, hey, this is my one opportunity to go and like lay it out in the line. You know, I mean, everyone, your family back home is like, oh, I wonder if dad's going to get anything, or all your friends are wondering about it because they see you train year round. So I think having the mindset of going in there and being like, hey, I'm purposely choosing an endeavor that has a very low success rate, and I spent the entire year, you know, preparing for this, that you need to have that mindset that when you're going to go out there, it's not going to just going to be a walk in the park. It's going to be like, hey, we're going to have to earn this. And there's, luck is always, I think, part of the equation. But my hunting partner, he's extremely mentally tough. It's one of those things where sometimes I have to like kind of grab him on the arm and be like, hey man, I need you to like drink water, sit down, chill out. Cause he's just like a machine. Like he just like will not stop. And there's that kind of point where some of it can be too much, but ultimately when we go into the backcountry, like we need to be on point. I mean, we're trying to chase down an animal that spends every day of its life, and its sole goal or sole focus of that day is to survive. And then we're going to come out of our cush little environments from, you know, cities, wherever it may be, and go out there and try to play a game with them in their natural environment and something they practice every day. So I think, you know, going into the backcountry and rolling in there with the mindset that, hey, this is going to be very challenging, but if you take your training seriously and you do things like your guys is, you call it the death hike, right?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, things like that. I know a couple of guys that I follow, some buddies, they recently did a rim to rim in the Grand Canyon. So going out and training and doing these things and kind of becoming comfortable with the idea of being uncomfortable is going to pay huge dividends when you go into the backcountry.
Yeah, for sure. Dude, being in Texas, you should totally hop over and do a rim to rim. It's awesome.
Yeah, I got a chance to raft the Grand Canyon 2 years ago, and that was awesome. We did it in January, so we totally froze our asses off.
Oh,
the entire
dang,
time.
I bet.
it was like puffies under dry suits and all that. And I've hiked the Grand Canyon a couple of times, but never done rim to rim. And I heard you guys talking about that. It was about a 40-mile loop you guys did, right?
Well, the death hike we did in Idaho this year was like 40-something miles that we busted out. But I've done a rim-to-rim of the Grand Canyon. We went north rim to south rim, and it's such a cool experience, man. Not only just seeing the Grand Canyon, but just like you get in there and there's way more diversity than you think. And then, you know, you start and it's like 30 degrees, and then you get later into the morning and down in the canyon and it's 100. I mean, it's just a wild experience.
Yep.
It's really cool.
I definitely had a moment. We hiked down to the bottom 1 year with my girlfriend, and I remember the people at the park were, they said, well, take the early bus because it gets hot pretty fast. I go, oh, come on. It's like, you know, it's like February, March, you know?
Yeah.
And so I took the late bus, and we got about halfway down, and that heat just hits you. And it was very humbling. So I got to the bottom, and, you know, ex-Army Ranger, this, that, I have my girlfriend in tow. And I was borderline heat exhaustion by the time I got to the bottom because I grossly underestimated the change in climate with that change in elevation that occurs in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, that's wild. So we didn't talk anything super specific about Atomic Athlete, but I definitely want to cover what you guys do. You know, you mentioned you have online programming. So obviously you have online programming for a bunch of different things. So whether that's general fitness or what have you, but you do have a specific program called Ultimate Predator for hunting prep. So kind of give us the lowdown on what that is in terms of, you know, what does the training look like on a weekly basis? Maybe like how many days a week, what kind of time's involved, how many weeks long is the whole program? So when should we be fitting it into season and all the kind of details like that?
Well, the Ultimate Predator is obviously the third kind of variation that we've designed. Like each year I go hunting, you know, I want to ride a new cycle, and that's been the most recent one. And that's actually a 3-month macro cycle. So whenever we talk about cycles, typically what's going to happen is, you know, a macro cycle is going to be a multiple month program. It's going to have multiple phases, for lack of a better word. And those smaller cycles are going to be called mesocycles, typically anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks. So the Ultimate Predator actually is a 12-week program, and it starts out from general to specific. So initially you're going to be training some, you know, strength, aerobic capacity. And as you progress through program, you know, you're going to do more and more specific sessions. And a lot of the specific sessions involve, you know, wearing your hunting equipment, your boots, your pack, carrying your bow or your rifle, whatever it may be. It's also going to have higher intensity as you move forward. So the main goal is like to build a good base, not only strength, aerobic capacity. And as you progress closer and closer to the season, you're starting to incorporate more variables that are similar to what you're going to experience in the mountains. And by the time you get to about halfway through that, you know, third block, I mean, like the sessions are not easy. They're not entertaining. They're not fun, but they're extremely effective. And I think that kind of has to go into the mindset where when you're training for an event like a hunt in the backcountry, like the training is not supposed to be fun. The training is supposed to give you added value or additional performance when you go up into the mountains. So if anything, I want you to suffer, you know, back home before you get to the mountains. So when you get to the mountains, you're like, oh man, like, hey, you know, this is hard, but this is not near as bad as that, you know, hour long tire drag I did. So it's a very, very specific program. As far as when you should drop into it, I'd probably say 13 weeks prior to your season is when you actually want to drop into it. And a lot of guys kind of get wrapped up in the idea that, well, I'm not at elevation. Elevation is going to affect me. And I know from a lot of the high end, the high level endurance coaches that I've worked with, they actually prefer their athletes to train in the heat over elevation because the mental fitness component of it. So, I mean, here in Texas, I have to train in, you know, June, July, and August, which are like the hottest 3 months of the year. So I'm on my side doing my tire drags. You know, it's 100, 101 degrees in the pavement. And the downside of the tire drag is that there's no wind. So if you're riding or running or moving over ground very quickly, at least you have a little bit of breeze. That tire drag is you're just getting like blasted by the sun the entire time. So if you're one of those athletes that does not live in the mountains, if you can train in a hot environment, that's going to have great carryover, not only physiologically, but mentally as well. So the Ultimate Predator is a great program. Like I said, if you would say like, hey, I really want to get ready for, you know, hunting season, it's like, cool. Do the Ultimate Predator. But ultimately, a lot of guys probably won't have the discipline and dedication to actually do that because you're training 4 or 5 times a week. You might not have the schedule, and only one of those sessions is done in the gym. And there's actually, I think, on the online version, there's a gym version and then also a bodyweight version. So if you don't have access to the gym, there's no excuse not to train strength.
Yeah, I was going to ask that if there was like an equipment requirement to complete that, but it sounds like it's pretty doable for much everybody.
It's super. I mean, like I said, the strength thing is one of those things where initially I had like some traditional gym strength stuff, you know, power clean, squats, this kind of stuff. And then I realized like, hey, if you're a 45-year-old guy, you might not be going to the gym and doing cleans. So there is a component on there that on the PDF I sent you guys, those aren't on there. But on the website, there's like an optional like, hey, you can also do this as your strength training protocol, which is going to involve more jumping lunges, jump squats. It's going to have more push-ups, pull-ups, you know, using your pack to train your core. So a much more minimal equipment approach.
Yeah, cool. I think you just underhandedly called out a bunch of our listeners, which I appreciate because you basically said not everybody's going to have the discipline to do this. So I hope our listeners take that as a challenge and prove us wrong here.
Well, I mean, my hunting partner, he's probably one of the best guys I know, and he's really pushed me to new levels mentally, even being a, you know, former military special operations guy. And it was so funny. We were out on this mule deer hunt a few weeks ago up in Colorado, and you know, we saw this great buck, and it was just kind of like, I kind of said, I made a comment about like, ah, it'd be nice if we can just get that one. And he was kind of looked at me and he was just like, yeah, but you didn't earn it. And I think there's so much satisfaction in putting in the work prior to the hunt. Like, hey, you know, I clocked in 3, 4, 5 days a week. You know, I showed the discipline, the dedication, the commitment to actually develop myself in as many ways as possible. My calling, my shooting, my navigation, having my kit straight, all of those things. And then seeing that, all that hard work kind of like transcend into a successful kill in the backcountry. It's like, hey, like I earned this. This wasn't just luck. It wasn't just some happenstance, chance occurrence. It was like I did all the right things. And I think the sense of accomplishment that comes behind something like that is going to be much higher than just walking up the mountain, bumping into a 7x7 and popping them, you know?
Yeah. That's a great way to cap it. Before I let you go, though, how can listeners stay up to date with Atomic Athlete, find you guys, maybe contact you if they have some programming or training questions, if you don't mind? Things like that. Give us the lowdown.
Well, you can always reach me at Jake, J-A-K-E, at atomic-athlete.com. As far as information on things going on, programs, all that, the website is a good one. Social media is good as well. It's at Atomic Athlete on Instagram. And then in Facebook, it's just Atomic Athlete as well. So lots of good things in the future, man. We're pretty excited. Really, really glad and feel fortunate that you guys have me on the podcast today, man. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. All right, hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jake. Once again, we cannot thank him and the crew at Atomic Athlete enough for providing you guys with this free training program. Go check it out. Go to exomountaingear.com/train There you'll get more information. You'll see a introduction video. Enter your email. We'll send you the free PDF right away, and you guys can get training. The other great thing about this program, as I mentioned in the intro, there's different levels to it, and you can scale it. So if you're just getting into shape, you can do level one. You can take a little break. You can come back and repeat level two, which is a bit tougher. Take a break, come back, repeat level three, which is a butt kicker. So again, go check this out, exomountaingear.com/train. As always, guys, if you're enjoying the show, we would love to see a review in iTunes. And you can also contact us directly with any questions, comments, or feedback to podcast@exomountaingear.com.